Welcome. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to episode 6, Future Assessment. This episode is Green Skills. I'm so looking forward to this episode. Future Assessment, this is a co-produced, totally co-produced between NTFE and FE News. And my co-anchor today is David Jones from NTFE. David, do you want to come and join me in the studio? Hey, David, how are you?
Morning, Gavin. Yeah, really good. Thanks. Looking forward to getting into this one. Lots to talk about, I think.
So much. 30 minutes is going to go in a blink of an eye. Unless you've been sort of, you know, just sleeping for the last sort of couple of months, yeah. Then before all of this as well, that the environment has just been very, 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 very high on the priorities. We had a little bit of an attention sort of distraction with COVID. I mean, rightly so. What a, you know, sort of horrific disaster that has been, and as someone who's had it, it's not very nice. But the environment is been absolutely key for much longer than we've been sort of living with COVID. COP26 is in Glasgow right now. Yeah. We were talking before in the green room. It's called the green room in the bit before. About some figures that you sort of had. I didn't know if you wanted to share them at all, David.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Gavin. And I think this really, the kind of the facts and the figures I'm going to share really kind of highlight why COP's important. So during 2020, as we know, you know, we had lockdowns, carbon emissions fell dramatically. According to the World Meteorological Organization, it was a dip of actually 17%. So that sounds massive, but actually that's only a really small blip on the long-term graph or the long-term trend. And I think, you know, it just shows that while we thought that was really, really big in the grand schemes, it you know, it's absolutely not. IPCC published a report in August, and that found that unless there's immediate and kind of rapid change, large-scale reduction in greenhouse gas emissions, then, you know, limiting global warming to close to the 1.5 degrees target that they want, that's going to be completely out of reach. Which really shows the kind of the urgency of it. And I think the next two stats are really key for me. So according to a survey led by Bath University, nearly 60% of young people that they approached said that they felt very worried or extremely worried about climate change. And that for me is massive. Also in the same research, 75% of people are saying, you know, that the future is frightening. That's their future. We need, you know, we need to do something about it. And like we said, that's why COP is so important.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and Greta ain't best happy about the outcomes from COP, nor is Barack Obama yesterday as well. And that's quite interesting. But whatever promises are made, some of those are a bit kicking the can down the road a little bit. Yeah. But how we deliver that with skills, with education, before we get to the skills sort of element, it's absolutely key. We can promise everything, but if we haven't got anyone that can deliver on that, how can we actually achieve this? You know, I just think it's...
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and that tying it back into assessment, you know, how do we assess people at the start? How do we assess what skills they've got? How, you know, how do we show progression?
Yeah, 100%. We've got two absolutely epic guests. And to be completely transparent, about a week ago, it was about 8 o'clock at night, and I was like, Beth, I really want you to join this show. Charlotte, I really want you to join this show. I mean, honestly, these two like live and breathe this. So we've got Beth from the Institute. We've got Charlotte from ETF. I wonder if you could both join us in the studio. And thank you for responding to that LinkedIn request. I think it was at crazy o'clock to just be able to do this. It's so important. And thank you both for joining us today. It's really, really great to see you both here.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
I wondered if I've got a couple of different things I want to cover. What's interesting, and this is sort of following on from what I said around the skills element, is DfE have done a response to COP26. Do you think it was strong enough? To highlight that for people, if someone, you know, hasn't sort of picked up on this, there was a really cool picture of Nadeem doing gardening in his suit. We all know Nadeem rolls his sleeves up and gets involved, but that was proper getting into it. I thought that was quite cool. But there's the Climate Award, the Climate Leaders Award. So really interesting is the National Education Nature Park, where we've got like an estate of, looking at around the environment twice the size of Birmingham. That's quite interesting in the education sector. Energy pods. But what else do you think was needed? Personally, I felt there was a little bit of a missed sort of opportunity. Now, one of the things when we're talking about the National Education Nature Park was recommendations to put up bird boxes. Now, that's great, but it does feel like we've sort of missed a little bit of an opportunity to be able to deliver this wider. Maybe if we could roll this out to like Charlotte, if you want to start off. But I think there's, what else could be being done in there? How could we embed sustainability, for example, into education?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I've been watching COPs, been at COPs for a long time. I think the first I was at COP this weekend. The first one I was that was live in my career was COP 14. So I've watched a few COPs over the years. And this one felt like there was much, much more emphasis on education for sustainable development and climate change education than there ever has been. There was a real spotlight on education and a recognition that education's absolutely a key enabler for us to meet our climate targets and our broader sustainability goals. So that felt to me really positive. And the DfE had a role in that. They hosted a number of events. The first Education and Environment Ministers Summit was hosted by them in collaboration with Mock COP, I think, and there was numerous events looking at green skills pathways, and of course the launch of the strategy on Friday, which I think is really welcome. I think the appetite for a strategy from DfE to help support and drive sustainability across the education sector, the appetite for it is humongous. I think people have been waiting for with bated breath for that, so I think it is welcome. I think it's strong. I think the fact that it recognises, the role of the curriculum as well as the estate is important. I think there's probably opportunities to put more meat on the bones in some areas. And I think the fact that it's been published as a draft strategy with that invite for engagement over the next 6 months is actually really, really welcome, and something that the ETF is definitely going to be contributing to, because I think particularly in the areas of curriculum, particularly in the areas of equipping teachers and educators and leaders to really understand their role and really understand the potential that they have and put that potential into reality, there's some things that we'd like to see there that we can push for, I think.
Yeah, that sounds cool. Beth, what if I could bring you in? Obviously, there's only so much you can say with your current role, but I've wondered if what else is sort of needed within there as well, sort of leading to that, particularly around embedding sustainability. I know you've been doing a lot of work around that at the Institute.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's good that Charlotte mentioned the strategy, because I do think that is a pretty strong, pretty comprehensive document, which does cross-refer to a lot of the work that we've been doing at the Institute through our employers and through our root panels to very much embed sustainability in all new technical education products and apprenticeships. And so the strategy that DfE have produced does refer to the sustainability criteria that we've put out there via our Green Apprenticeships Advisory Panel, which is, which is also a really, really good thing that the DfE has supported, made up of employers from across the spectrum and chaired by Judy Ling Wong, who's an activist and an artist. And so from a sector that can have a massive impact on green, but might not be the obvious one, this sort of stereotypical one that you would go to. And I think very much the kind of action message that you gave at the beginning, Gavin, is right. It's about what we do with this stuff. So the DfE strategy has signposted a lot of really, really good initiatives that we're undertaking with employers to get everyone, whatever root or sector they're working in, to think, how do we embed sustainability? And actually, David was just mentioning earlier that it's really, really good to hear that our sustainability criteria are being applied, certainly by NCFE.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we looked at that and we realized that was something that we could actually, look to and kind of pin our hat on almost. And it gives something kind of tangible there to be able to start looking at how do we start to embed sustainability through our curriculum, through our products and services. I think it will be key moving forward.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's what I'm sort of mean. I just think you guys are leading by a great example. That's what I wanted you on today. David, we were talking beforehand around green skills, green skills needs. I don't know if you wanted to ask everyone about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Beth mentioned something there. It's, you know, involving employers, you know, what, giving them what they want, kind of what the learners, what they need. So with that in mind, how do you both think that we are going to deliver the green skills needs? It's a two-prong question. And are we clear enough with what those skills are?
Shall I make a quick start? And then, because I think being from the Institute, like our mantra, you know, our place in the system is as the voice of the employer. And actually, who knows better what green skills are needed than employers? And I think our role very much through the kind of, through the advisory panel and through the sustainability criteria and through the action of our root panels is to curate and support employers to make sure that there are the right products and apprenticeships, green products in all sectors. So at the moment, our employer advisory panel has identified 44 apprenticeships which are green, for example, but we expect that to grow and grow and grow as they start to really focus on different sectors. And then also, you know, I also am in an arm's length body that is part of the civil service as well. And so I think my other real contribution in the system is trying to join up within government. It's a bit of a bonus that I've spent most of my career working in climate change. And so I worked on the renewable heat incentive, household energy efficiency, smart grids, and all these really, really tangible skills driven changes that the economy needs, you know, from retrofit to big battery manufacture to wind turbines. And so joining up with the Green Skills Task Force and feeding into that along before its production back in July, you know, just made sure that skills, which, to be honest, when I was working in those sectors years back, I don't think we focused enough on skills. But now, you know, skills feel front and centre when the government is producing its net zero strategy. And they've set an ambition for 2 million new jobs by 2030. And the various strategies, the 10-point plan, have kind of mapped out what a lot of those might be. And so, yeah, so I'm working across those two axes.
I think that's really interesting. Go for it, Charlotte.
Well, I was just going to say, I think the work that IFATE's been doing, especially thinking about new jobs, kind of new green jobs that are being created, has been really, really welcome. I worry that we're missing something around how we equip and enable existing people in the existing workforce to adapt and upskill and reskill, particularly in areas where we know there will be demand, but it's not there yet. And I'm interested in how kind of government and industry and employers can work together to make sure that that's kind of a smooth transition. So, you know, we desperately need retrofitters. We desperately need engineers who can install heat pumps rather than gas boilers. But at the moment, the market is still kind of in a backwards looking, you know, in a technology that's going to be obsolete in future. So how do we make sure that that transition is smooth? And how do we instill kind of that lifelong learning and that ability to equip the existing workforce as well as those kind of going into their careers for the first time? Because given the urgency of what we're working with, we need that to be fairly rapid. I think local skills plans will help. I think the fact that there's been an amendment to the bill to say that actually national climate and sustainability targets need to be considered in those plans is really sensible, because I think sometimes the risk of working with employers is that the trajectory, their priority is kind of in the shorter term, the next 3 to 5 years perhaps, rather than that really long-term view that we need if we're talking about targets that take us to 2030. So I think keeping links between innovation in industry, government policy, educators and their skills, because of course who's going to train those that need training if we haven't equipped our teachers to do that? So I think it's a big knotted area, isn't it? And some of the skills we absolutely know what's needed, we absolutely do, and others we don't. So we need to be equipping people to recognize that lifelong learning and help them be resilient to changes in their work in future.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really important point as well, isn't it? Because, you know, we say about green skills and sustainability skills, but actually that might be things like communication. It might be teamwork, and it might not be something that's seen as green, but actually that's really important. They're the fundamentals.
Yeah, 100%. Charlotte, you looked into my brain and saw what I was thinking, actually. It's really so important, though, because, like, you know, there's people super gluing themselves to the roads thinking about how we sort of retro fit houses. So, you know, we can, but if you think about an education levels, is that level two or level three to retro, you know, to, you know, do like exterior insulation or interior insulation, you know, and then we're also looking at Rolls-Royce, is it today, with the nuclear sort of, you know, plants, is that a level six, is that beyond, you know, what we're sort of looking at? I just think it's really interesting, and Beth, it's great, and Charlotte, it's fantastic you're saying that at this COP in particular, education is so key, yeah. Is so key for that. It rolls me into my next question, really. How do we equip educators? And then also, it's a multi-pronged. How do we equip the educators, then those leaders of the future, the leaders of the now, to deliver those green skills of the right now, but also those of the future? Charlotte, yeah, what are your sort of thoughts and views on that?
I mean, there's lots to be done. And I've given this a lot of thought in terms of there's so much change that can come from individuals. And already, if you look across that sector, there's people that are highly passionate, absolutely get this, and are creating change, affecting change within their circle of influence, whether they're an educator, whether they're a leader, whether they're a learner. You know, a lot of changes historically have come from learner demand. But we also need to think about the system and how we ensure that the frameworks that shape how our sector operates are equipping and motivating and instilling that need to embed sustainability in our work. And I think some of that can be done through you know, inclusion in initial teacher training standards, for example, inclusion in the professional standards for the sector, inclusion in the regulatory and funding framework, so people have got the incentives that they need to implement change. And that one's not just as a motivator, but that also helps hardwire it, help it stick. I mean, one of the things that I find most frustrating is that if you jump back in time to 2008 through to 2011, the FE sector was doing bucket loads of education for sustainable development quite strategically. And then since then, there's been other priorities and that kind of that momentum has been lost. So we need to hardwire these things into the system. And of course, I work for the Education Training Foundation. We absolutely believe that the best way to get good learner outcomes is through developing excellence in teaching and leadership. So CPD has got to be a big part of this, not just at the initial teacher education stage, but for the existing workforce, to go back to my earlier point.
Yeah, no, definitely. Beth, you've got like your IFA hat now, but also you've been working in other sort of departments that have all been around sort of green skills in the past as well. What's your sort of view on how we can equip educators and leaders of the now, but also of the future? So I think it's important, like Charlotte had a really good point around sometimes we're looking short term when we need to be sort of having this sort of strategic plan to be able to look and traject. But that's difficult to be able to deliver that on sort of educators and leaders to be always sort of keeping up to date with that. But you've got this unique insight. I'd love to hear what you've got to say on that, really.
Yeah, I mean, if I could just start by, I think going back to one of the stats David gave us at the very, very beginning in the intro about how important climate change is to people, to young people, which is what the focus was of COP on Friday, to women, which is the focus of COP today, gender, you know, to, as Charlotte mentioned, people retraining, you know, people in traditional jobs who need, you know, the next set of skills within that job to be able to transition from servicing a gas boiler to servicing a hydrogen boiler or installing a heat pump, as you mentioned. I guess the challenge for us, working with employers, working through employers, is to make sure that there are products and offers that are flexible enough and high enough quality available to meet that passion and that enthusiasm, you know. And we've all been worrying a lot about take-up rates over COVID for, you know, lots of kind of economic and social reasons. We all want more take-up of various technical education products and apprenticeships and jobs, you know, and actually harnessing that passion through things like boot camps, through the sustainability standards that we're using to review our products and sort of discern with employers where new training is needed to transition to net zero, which is what we all need. I mean, I think there's something about orientating ourselves around that passion that we know employers feel and we know individuals feel at whatever stage they're at in their life. You know, and then I think that the other big set of levers that we've got is around, again, as Charlotte mentioned, the local skills improvement plans. And, you know, local areas know their needs best. And actually, the white paper seeks to kind of empower local areas, and that, you know, the budget gave a big boost to investment in lots of technical education products and apprenticeships, and finding our way through that. So, you know, some LEPs, local enterprise partnerships, have really, really solid strategies for skills based on their local area. So I find the contrast between Greater Manchester and Teesside interesting, for example, when it comes to green skills. I visited Rochdale recently, and I've been talking a lot to Teesside and Combined Authority as well. So in Greater Manchester, they're very much focusing on retrofit because of the nature of their stock, the nature of their geography and their topography. And they're very much focusing their green skills agenda on retrofitting all of their buildings. Whereas in Teesside, actually, there's lots of big new opportunities come in to manufacture and build, you know, most recently wind turbine blades. And they absolutely need the skills. And it's about building the factory, building the turbines, and then maintaining the turbines. And so we have, you know, there is already a new apprenticeship standard has come on that's about maintaining wind turbines. But we just need to make sure from a system level that we're flexible enough that we're able to, you know, help and support employers to anticipate those future skills needs and get the right products in place so that there's no lag, and so that the UK doesn't miss opportunities, which is a real risk. So we're using our own labour, we're upskilling our own people to do all of these new jobs that are coming forward.
I think that's really interesting as well, though, there, Beth, that you mentioned those kind of differences within the regions. I think that it's really important, actually, because there are differences, that allows for collaboration. We can see where the strengths are in the different areas, and that helps, you know, that collaboration to drive this forward. I think it's a really good time, I think, to ask this question, I guess. And you've touched on it to a point. If you could dream big and really big, what would you like to see to kind of deliver the green skills and particularly assessment for the future?
Shall I start? I think we've touched on some of it, right? Dreaming really big. For me, nearly every apprenticeship is a green apprenticeship in some way or another. Some are more direct, some are less direct. Getting that long-term, working with employers on that long-term thinking, and then, you know, as the Institute, translating that into products that people understand, working with awarding organisations, working with FE colleges, working with local areas, so that people understand what the offer is and can take it up in a timely way, you know, in an appropriate way for where they live. It feels like that is, you know, that is the mecca that we need to get to these 2 million new jobs by 2030 and ultimately, more importantly, to get to, you know, net zero. And I think that in terms of dreaming big, there's a wider benefit for skills and people in the economy that will be driven by that. So at the moment, you know, the perception of vocational education still isn't quite there. It's still not quite understood. I think the test is almost for the mums at the school gate around me when I'm picking up my children to be saying, oh, I want my child to do the sustainability business specialist apprenticeship, which is the new one we launched last week, which any sector applies to any sector. So an apprentice can go in and say, what do you, you know, and help that business to work out what they need to become more sustainable. So I would, you know, encourage all big employers to think about that one. But you know, I would also, wouldn't it be great if people around us were seeing that as the best option for whether it's their child or whether it's themselves in their, you know, reskilling and career ambitions, rather than necessarily reverting to kind of, you know, the sort of A-level academic path that a lot of our schools channeled us into without really explaining the alternatives to us.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. And I think that's interesting of this, not just thinking of, you know, mums of the future, but also those career changes of the now that are just sort of seen cop and thought, you know, I can just keep sitting here and not doing anything. Why can't I just, you know, retrained and like an upskill and go into a different apprenticeship. I think that's absolutely key. I'm interested in that apprenticeship myself. Charlotte, if you used to dream and dream big, what would you want to see?
I mean, I completely agree with kind of Beth's vision. I think I challenge you, Gavin, to say, you know, you don't necessarily need to retrain to contribute like positively to climate change and sustainability. And I think absolutely everybody has a role to play, whether that's in their personal lives or whether that's in their jobs. And in the same way that Beth just said, you know, all apprentices can have a positive impact on the green economy. I genuinely, you know, I take that even further. I genuinely think that all learners can and should be sustainability learners, whether that's in terms of developing technical skills that will help them contribute to the technological solutions to climate change and our broader sustainability challenges, or whether that's developing some of the broader principles that David mentioned earlier on in terms of understanding sustainability, understanding the system and how one change can kind of create another one, another issue, whether that's a positive or a negative solution, in terms of how you communicate sustainability effectively, how you build sustainability into your everyday decision making as a business owner or as a news reporter or as a curriculum manager. You know, we all have a role to play. And so for me, thinking big, it's really about how we use education to really explicitly meet society's sustainability needs. How do we equip all learners with the knowledge, the skills, the behaviours and the agency that they need to contribute positively to sustainability? Because if we're not equipping them effectively, you know, we're not doing them, you know, we're not serving them correctly. We're not doing them justice as learners. So for me, that's my goal, is for absolutely ESD to be completely inclusive for all learners to be sustainability learners. And there's a big system behind that yeah, you know, is working towards it, but that, you know, we at ETF and IFE and NCFE and, you know, other sector bodies are all working towards, but we need to ramp it up, I think.
Yeah. And everyone's a learner. So, you know, it's, yeah, that's everybody, isn't it? That's leaders, that's educators, that's learners. I think maybe if we went that way, we're sort of thinking of it rather than going that way, is a really cool way of going about it. David, what would you want to see if you could dream and dream big?
Oh yeah, put me on the spot. I think I agree with kind of Charlotte and Beth. I think, you know, that adult education piece is really important. So, you know, my 9-year-old and my 5-year-old have been coming home from school. They've been talking about COP, which is fantastic. But then, as adults, what does that mean for us? We need to understand the kind of the importance of it. It's something that we need to take action on as well. It's not just a reliance on the kind of the young people to keep this message moving forward. We need to lead as adults also. We need to listen, but we also need to lead. And I think absolutely right. It's all about, we want to see as many individuals take some kind of ownership of this, you know, as possible. And just that collaboration. I think we need a lot kind of closer collaboration within this space, within education. With, you know, for me, without education, this we can't meet the targets. It's that fundamental. Education is so important in this space. So for me, that it's educating everybody. It's everybody taking some ownership.
Yeah, 100%. I can't ask everyone and miss myself out. I agree with all of you, but I think it's interesting to be able to have that. The DfE plan is like sort of looking at sort of distinct sort of you know, courses, modules, incorporating that in. I think that's a really cool start. I think also for the existing workforce, we also need to be able to enable people, like Charlotte was saying, that we are all learners, we're all able to equip ourselves. Yesterday, I was a little bit late going to work because before COVID, on the way to work, I was one of a group of people that planted about 2,000 trees in a field. And I walked past it yesterday just because I could, to see, are they popping out over the plastic now and stuff like that? And for me, I'm loving seeing that. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, how can we bring that in for everyone? Is this some trees? Do you know what I mean? And like, what's beautiful about it, I'm not going to be able to enjoy that sort of that wood in the future, my kids and grandkids will. And that's what I love about it. And it's sort of, how can we sort of wrap it in a way that is also for people's well-being and for people to feel good about doing the right thing, for not just for us, but for the future. And that's what I'd love to see, is that everybody, time is gone. Charlotte, Beth, David, thank you so much. Like, today is really, really, really important, I think, for everybody. We need to have a system which is supporting all of those ambitions and plans and promises which COP26 is covering. It's really, really, really important. So thank you for your time today. Everyone that's joined us live, everyone's going to join us on catch up. Thank you so much for joining us. This is so important to be able to deliver to our learners, to educators, to leaders, to everybody, to employers, just to be able to bring this into play. A lot of thank yous. This is a total collaboration between NCFE and FE News. Lindsay, thank you so much for always sort of being lead on this and being really, really flexible. David, thank you so much. I was a bit like, we've got to do this one. And thank you everyone for being so like, yeah, trusting on that. FE News side, Leah, thank you so much. We'll see you in the background for making all the magic happen. Kelly and Finley, thank you so much. Everyone, we'll see you next week. We're going to be live, actually, from AOC next week, which is going to be quite exciting. I'm going to be doing two streams a day in collaboration with NCFE. So we see you there. We're going to be covering all sorts of cool stuff. So everyone, see you next week. And thank you, everyone, for joining us today. Really, really important one. So thank you.
Thank you.
Brilliant. Thank you. Bye. Bye.